Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This podcast is also a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. I created Better Leaders, Better Schools because I was fed up of not having deep conversations, vulnerable, authentic conversations about school leadership. And that's why you keep coming back week after week. You listen to this podcast as an investment in your own leadership development. If you would like to invest in the production of Better Leaders, Better Schools, I have really good news. It's extremely affordable. $1 or $2 a month will go very far and make a big impact. At $10 a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every 60 days. To become a patron, it's easy. Just click the link in the show notes, become a patron. Thank you for investing in yourself and thank you for investing in this podcast. Thank you for listening every week. Let's get this show started.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
Today's guest is Paul Vandersteen, who's been a science department chair at Neuqua Valley High School in Naperville, Illinois for 18 years. The science department has 29 members in two different buildings. Paul's hired them all, along with others that have left to pursue other interests or relocated. Paul was one of the original staff members when Neuqua Valley opened its doors in 97. He was instrumental in developing the climate and culture of the building and is the longest standing member of their instructional leadership team. He received his master's degree in ed leadership from North Central College and his undergrad degree in exercise science and science education at the University of Iowa. Paul is also the head men's cross-country coach. His program started with 18 men in 97 and has grown to as much as 168 members. His teams have won two Illinois state titles, finished the top four 8 times in the last 13 years. He's happily married to his wife, Char, and has 2 children. His daughter, Samantha, is a junior at the University of Nebraska, and his son, Austin, is a junior at Neuqua Valley High School. Ladies and gents, may I introduce to you Paul Vandersteen.
Hello, Daniel. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, Paul. You know, my buddy Kurt highly, highly recommended you. And, you know, whenever you invite somebody to the podcast that you don't know yet, you're a little worried, fearful they'll say no. But you said yes, and I really appreciate your time. Can't wait to learn from you.
Well, I really appreciate you having me on. Kurt's a great guy. He's a parent of one of my cross-country guys, and he's always a mover and shaker and always trying to learn and help others.
So, Paul, what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
Well, it's a long story. Probably started from my birth, believe it or not. Both my parents were Peace Corps volunteers.
Okay.
They both attended Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo and were the first group to head over there in the Kennedy era. And I was born in Abadan, Nigeria.
Wow.
I didn't stay very long because they weren't supposed to have children over there. And after I was old enough to fly, they let them go a little bit earlier than what they were intended on staying for. But they flew back to the States, and then I'm explaining that because obviously the roots of education is, I guess, was born into me. After that, you know, my dad was getting his working his dissertation in Bloomington, Indiana, and he was a high school teacher himself. And my mom was a middle school teacher. In fact, I always tell the trivia, she taught two of Bobby Knight's kids while she was at University Middle School there in Bloomington. And along that path, you know, my mom actually became a very influential leader amongst the teachers in Bloomington, Indiana. She actually became president of the teachers for the National Education Association. And they settled a dispute right before we left. When I was right before my junior year of high school, we left for Sterling, Illinois. My dad took a job as director of a sports complex. My mom went on to, you know, become a UNISERV director. In fact, she ended up being the director of all the UNISERV directors in the state of Illinois before she retired. My dad left teaching, but still was very wrapped up in administration of track and field and cross country and coaching the club team. So You know, and then, of course, I had my influential coaches and teachers like we all do. You know, I think, you know, some of us are in our, especially in our middle school years, we're very susceptible to those influences. And I was no different. I had a middle school teacher named George Finley. He was a PE teacher, actually, who really believed in me and taught me discipline and taught me hard work. And, you know, you go from there. You know, I had a great high school teacher in Gordy Neudemaker at Sterling High School who really showed me that learning can be a lot of fun. So I decided when I was a junior in high school, I was going to pursue this field, and here I am.
You know, and after reading your bio that you sent me too, I see a lot of connections based on what you shared about your parents and these coaches and what you do now. That's incredible stuff. So how would you describe, Paul, your leadership style and how did you develop it?
Well, I think like a lot of us, our leadership styles are developed, again, by influential people around us. I guess my mom and dad both have great influence on my leadership style. I guess my dad's leadership style is very calm and collected, if you will. He was a stern man. He passed away about 2 years ago this February, but he was very, I guess, kind of a student's teacher. He was able to command respect by also kind of relating and kind of connecting with the students in their silly ways. But yet he, you knew when he meant business. So I think that's kind of been my model, is to, you know, be one of the kids, if you will. I really enjoy, you know, being with adolescents. And, you know, I think they are influenced by you also kind of, they see that you're a real person. And so I think that just kind of was instilled in me through my early years. And I guess that's the kind of leader that I am. My faculty members, they tell me that I'm very approachable, that I'm a good listener. They can tell me anything is what they tell me. And I guess that makes me feel good that I'm not somebody, I'm not in a leadership position because I'm power hungry. In fact, a lot of times I've been offered, you know, opportunities to pursue other leadership positions, and I don't do it because I want to keep that balance between a leadership position, amongst adults, but I want to maintain that connection with kids. In my current position, I get to teach a class and I get to coach. So I get the best of both worlds.
Paul, I really admire your dedication to education. I love that you've been at your current school for a while in the science department chair for 18 years. My mind is boggled that the whole department has 29 members. And so I'd really love to hear how you keep a personality that can connect with all 29 of those faculty members, that they would call you approachable and a good listener. That really stood out to me. So do you have any tips and tricks of how to develop an approachable and a good listening style of leadership?
Yeah, well, I'm lucky in that I've hired them all. You know, since Neuqua Valley opened in 97, I became department chair in 98. And I guess I'm very lucky that I've been able to kind of bring my own people on the bus, if you will.
Right.
And so when I interviewed all of our teachers, you know, I'm looking for particular qualities. And so I guess I got that going for me, for one. Secondly, I guess it's very important that I think the person comes first. You know, obviously we all have a task at mind when we all have roles that we have in our schools. And I think it's very, very important that my staff knows that I care about them as a person first and foremost. And I think my actions and my interactions with them illustrate that. To me, it's just not worth it unless you really have developed a relationship with someone. And so, you know, I like to start my day, you know, I may have something pressing to begin my day, but I like to get away from my computer and talk to my teachers as much as possible. They come in and we're really lucky too in that most of the staff is in one office, and there's a lot of, you know, a lot of talk about politics and about issues, et cetera, in the office. And I think it's important that I listen and I become part of those conversations, and I keep that positive spin. My old mantra is nothing great ever happens without enthusiasm. And I try to stay as enthusiastic and as positive and joke around and have as much fun with my staff, along with listening to their concerns. And they know I'm an advocate for them. They know that that when they bring something up to me, I'm going to follow through on it. I'm going to write it down, and I'm going to follow through. And they see that. So I think as long as they see that I'm a servant leader, I'm an advocate for them. If they need something, I'm going to go to bat, and I'm going to try whatever I can to get that for them. Even if it's an outlandish idea, you know, there are some pretty crazy ideas that my staff has come up with that I say, well, I may not be able to do that, but look, what about this? And then we move forward and pursue that. And I think they really appreciate that.
Yeah. And what I really appreciate is this idea of just caring about them first, of listening, being person first before whatever needs to get done. You said like to connect in their conversations, to be a really great listener. And that's a common theme that I've heard. So thank you for unpacking that a little bit in terms of being a great leader that they can't go under, you know, overstated. Paul, you mentioned how you got to hire everybody in that department, which is an amazing gift as a leader. You said there's certain things you look for. Do you mind sharing those, or is it a secret?
No, not at all. First of all, when that person sits down to interview with me, the first question I ask myself is, can this person connect with kids? That's first and foremost. They may have all the knowledge and the know-how and the, you know, and the methodologies in the world, but if they can't connect with students and they if I can't see that they truly love working with adolescents, then they're not a fit for us. Number two is I always look for in teachers, I look for flexibility. You know, I look for people that are willing to go to bat for others. I look for servant educators. I think, you know, you hear about servant leadership all the time, and teachers are leaders within their classroom, right? So I look for those same qualities in my teachers. I think that it's important that students' needs are being met. And, you know, it could be as little as, you know, getting papers back on time to, you know, following up on, I guess, a transcript or whatever the case may be. It's sure. It's important that these students see that the teacher has their best interest in mind. And then the last thing I look for is somebody who's going to, I guess I call them workhorses. Are they going to work hard, but also are they going to have fun doing it? And I think that combination is really, really important because, you know, there are a lot of people out there that will work really hard, but they'll work so hard they may lose sight of that balance. And I'm always stressing balance with my teachers because we're part of a high school that's very, very, I guess, very driven. In fact, as a staff, as an instructional leadership team, we've been talking about that the entire year. Our principal, Dr. McBride, he's also a very good listener. And we told him at the beginning of the year, you know, this is getting out of control, the anxiety from our staff and our students. It's like we're constantly trying to push one another and by our actions. And, you know, what can we do to acknowledge that stress and try to reduce that somehow? So I guess I'm looking for staff that also are going to keep a balance. They're not just going to live their life through the high school.
You know, I think a lot of schools experience that stress and that anxiety. What ideas did you all come up with in terms of balancing, I guess, I don't know what it is, the pressures of the job and still feeling, you know, very present and enjoying your life?
Yeah, it's I think, first of all, you have to give people permission.
Okay.
You know, and you can't be a door watcher. You can't be... You know, of course, if a teacher comes in late every day and then leaves right at the bell rings, that's an issue. But, I mean, Dr. McBride, he challenged us to look within ourselves. You know, what are we doing as leaders that might instill some of that stress? You know, just by example, you know, what are we doing? You know, I kid with Dr. McBride. I said, sometimes I think there's like five of him because he's at everything, you know. And he had acknowledged to us, he's the other in a meeting about a month or two ago, he said, you know, I need to maybe look at my presence at all these events. You know, as Neuqua Valley High School is a high school of 4,000 students, like a small city.
Yeah.
And the man is, he's everywhere. I mean, he's at every event. And he said to us, he's like, I think I maybe need to start looking at, maybe it's not good that I'm at everything, because what kind of message am I sending to our staff that, you know, that I'm present at every event?
Well, good for him for being a good listener. Good for him for that not actually being a blind spot, that he can acknowledge him attending every event could actually have this unspoken expectation. Well, if I could be there as the principal with everything I have to do, teachers, where are you? You need to be at these events too. With 4,000 kids, I'm sure the admin team's fairly large. At my school, it's 841 kids, and we have three. We have the principal, two assistant principals. And one of the things that we do, and I don't know if this would help if you want to pass it on or not, but better leaders, the listeners, what has worked at our school is we divide up days. And so all of us have a late night. And on that night, when there's an event, we know that we'll attend it. But outside of that, you know, it's personal choice, but honestly, we just strongly recommend you attend events on your late night so that you have time to, you know, work out, connect with your spouse, be with your family, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, good suggestion.
Hey, so that email, I don't know if it's your signature, but I noticed it too, that nothing great ever happens without enthusiasm. What does that mean to you? Why'd you pick that as a phrase that you really connect with?
I just think positive energy goes a long way. You know, when I first started teaching and especially with the coaching, you come across coaches in your life and you see models of coaches that are very stern disciplinarians. And I always question myself, could we win? Could we be successful? I should say, I hate to use the word win. Could we be successful in instilling a love for running and having fun, you know, doing it and building that camaraderie amongst ourselves? Could I do that with a positive laughter kind of, not a laissez-faire, but just more of a low-key approach? And you know, as I went into coaching and teaching, I went, I don't know if this is going to work. And fortunately, I've met some other coaches that have shown me that it does work. You know, I watched Al Carius over here at North Central in Naperville. You know, he's been there for 50 years.
Wow.
And yeah, the man is a legend. If you want to, that's a man you should interview. he is something else. And he lives by the mantra of run for fun and personal best. And, you know, he's been a great role model for a lot of us and shown us that you can be that positive, undisciplinarian type of person and still influence the people underneath you. And of course, myself or Al or any of coaches that have that kind of that philosophy, you know, of course there's time when you one-on-one need to sit a young man down or young woman down and talk to them about their behavior or what they're doing. But in my opinion, yelling, cussing, you know, playing the disciplinarian, I'm the head honcho role, I just have never bought into it. You know, I wondered if my philosophy or my approach would work, but now I believe it does, especially after watching others do the same thing.
Yeah, and I think that authoritative disciplinarian sort of style of leadership, you know, that may drive some spike in short-term results, but to me, in my observations and experience, it never leads to lasting change. And it has to be that relational influence where you build up relational capital and then can make withdrawals when necessary.
Yeah, good metaphor. I like that.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Going back to the interview, I want to keep picking your brain because I know school leaders really want to know how to hire the best people and get the right people on the bus, as Jim Collins would say. And you said that you're looking for that the teacher connects with kids, that they're flexible and they work hard. Is there anything you do during the interview that gets at that, or is that something where you are just measuring the teacher during their probationary period as a novice teacher at your school, and then if they've got it, you keep them. If they don't, you look for somebody else to replace them.
Well, this is probably a secret I shouldn't give out if some of these other suburban high schools are listening to this, but I'm going to do it anyway. You know, it's funny. A lot of the schools in the suburbs, they have this style of interviewing that turns candidates off. And what they do is they bring the candidate into a room. They sit them at a long table, and they have, you know, three, four teachers. They have the department chair. They have the principal or an assistant principal all sitting at that table. And they all have their questions, right? And they take turns firing these questions at the candidate. And they usually sit the candidate at the head of the table. And think about, you know, coming out of college, you know, you're a 21, 22-year-old kid, you're looking for a teaching job, and you go into one of these high-stake interviews. do you really think you're getting to know that candidate by employing that style?
Right.
You know, I have gotten so many teachers that have come on board with my staff because those other schools employ that practice. and I can name five of my staff members right now. And in Neuqua Valley, District 204, we don't pay as high, but they came on board because they felt that they got to know us and we got to know them better than the other interview processes. So when I interview a candidate, it's super low key. I want to see who they really are. I don't want to see the prototype, a standardized answer to a question, you know, because they all know how to answer those questions. I want to see who they really are. So I guess, you know, of course I ask the traditional questions, but after the candidate warms up a little bit, I'll get into, you know, what are some of your hobbies? What do you do for fun? You know, what are your interests? What are your passions? And by listening to those, I'm going to see and hear what this person's really all about. You know, what's your favorite book? Hmm. You know, if you were stranded on an island and you could pick three people, who would you pick and why? You know, sometimes funny, goofy questions like that get the real person to come out and you see whether they're going to be a fit for your school or not.
So, Paul, when does your podcast come out? You have some great questions you ask.
Yeah, not as organized as you, I don't think.
Hey, so let me flip it on you. You're going to a stranded island, Paul, and you could bring three people. Who are you going to bring?
Oh, well, that's a great question. I think Jim Collins would be a good one.
Yeah.
Anthony Robbins.
Oh, wow.
I would love to have him because I think he would bring a lot of positive energy.
Absolutely.
To a lot of things. And then I think I'd probably have to bring the guy on, I can't remember his name right now, who does the show. You know, he's dropped in the wild and has to survive.
Right.
What's his name? Bear Grylls, right?
Okay, I'm not familiar with that show, but probably somebody that is trained in survivalist.
Yes.
He can help you guys stay alive. Paul, I think, you know, you didn't pick me and that's okay. We just met, but I'm definitely parachuting into that island. It sounds like it'll be a lot of fun.
And let's pause here for a message from our sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. You know, I'm just like you. I'm a school leader that wants to get better every single day, and that's why I created a free gift for you called The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential. You can grab it today for free by texting the word UNLOCK NOW to 33444. That's UNLOCK NOW to 33444, and The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential will be delivered straight to your inbox. And now back to our show.
So, Paul, tell me the story of starting your cross-country team. And before you begin, I'm really interested in this because I think we share a similar passion for running. I don't know your history. Like, I was never a runner, okay? And at my church, they always invite folks, and they actually did it today at today's service. They invite people to join Team World Vision. It's a nonprofit. They do all sorts of work all around the world. But with running specifically, they get people to sign up for the marathon, and then folks fundraise. And then the largest nonprofit that gets a team together for the Bank of America Chicago Marathon. And through the fundraising efforts, they provide clean drinking water for kids in Africa.
Right.
I could do the authoritative disciplinarian leadership. I think I tried that a little bit when I was a basketball coach. It didn't work out that well, and I developed my own style. But the beauty of the marathon team was I just invited kids. Who wants to do something, well, like Jim Collins would say, a BHAG, you know, a big, hairy, audacious goal. Who wants to do something incredible? You know, set some goal that you never thought you'd achieve as a young person, run 26 miles in a race. And who wants to save people's lives, because we can do that with clean water for kids in Africa. And the response was tremendous. Paul, over 3 years, I've had almost 100 kids run the and train the race and complete it. We've raised just over $25,000 for clean water projects. I know that you've had crazy success with your cross-country team. Tell me the story of how that started and how you get so many people to come out and join the team.
Well, yeah, it's when Equal Valley opened in fall of 97, I had 18 guys on the team. And the summer before, the secret of distance running, as you probably have figured out, is that especially in cross-country in high school, is you've got to put the miles in during the summer. If you don't train during the summer, you can't just show up in August, the first day of cross-country practice, and expect to be successful in early November at the state meet. So that first summer, you know, I think I had 9 kids in the summer program. And I remember, I'll never forget this, I showed up to one of those summer sessions, and I had 1 kid show up. Man, was that the low time. But I didn't know it was a low time. I just wrote it off to, oh, kids are on vacation, et cetera. You got to start somewhere. But, you know, I guess the first thing that I did is, you know, like I think any person that wants to build a program is you got to go find out what works. So, you know, the first place I went was over to Elmhurst, York, and visited Joe Newton, the legendary coach over there, and watched one of his summer sessions. You know what I picked up from him? It was not the workouts. It wasn't the, you know, he's got a little bit different leadership style than I do. He's a little bit more of a barker, you know, he yells and screams, but he also has great relationships with kids. Don't let him fool you. But well, anyway, the thing that I gathered the most was his personal touch with every kid. He shook every kid's hand.
It's awesome.
And after I visited him that day, I made up my mind. That's what I was going to do. And it was kind of uncomfortable at first. You know, you're shaking everybody's hand, and sometimes you're shaking a young man's hand for no reason other than just to, you know, say goodbye. You know, but the rule was they had to check in with me by shaking my hand, and they had, before they could leave, they had to shake my hand. And you would not believe the smiles and the connections that you can make with adolescents by doing that. And that's kind of built the foundation. I think once the word got out that there was a coach that cared about the athletes and that he was positive and, you know, he was, you know, trying to get the most out of them, they started showing up. And, you know, communication was key. I started up a listserv. You know, I, you know, sent out lots of emails. I made myself accessible. In other words, a parent would call or email, man, I'd get back to them right away and answer their questions. I tried to make the program as fun as possible. I started a summer camp in Oregon, Illinois, at Laredo Field Campus, that run by Northern Illinois University there. And so it's an overnight camper. We have speakers, and we used to go horseback riding, go, you know, paintballing and swim and everything else. And I just, you know, try to do what Al Carey's does, you know, make running as fun as possible. Because obviously all of us are trained to hate running. You know, running is used as a punishment, right?
Yeah.
Physical education or in other sports, you know, you've got to kind of change that mindset. And as the years went on, it, you know, just like in Jim Collins' book, you know, Good to Great, it got to a critical mass. You know, our team leveled off at about 40, 50 guys for a long time. And then it just seemed like overnight, you know, it went up to 80, then it went to 120, and then it went to 168. And by the way, you know, you read Gladwell's books, I'm a believer in that 150 mark in terms of a manageable amount. Because once we got over 150, it did get a little unmanageable. But we're at like 135 now. It's perfectly manageable. I've got 3 amazing assistant coaches, and we've built on that. The guys have really bought in. I remember back in the day, 10 years ago, I could not convince an incoming freshman to run during the winter, you know, to get ready for track and field. And now this past winter, I think we had like 13 freshmen were running every day, and I didn't say anything to them. It just became part of our culture in regards to this is what you do if you want to be successful. So I'm very, very fortunate that I've got young men that are willing to put that work in, you know, to be the best runners that they can be.
So how do you think you continue to build that culture and make sure nobody gets overlooked? I'm sure with, you know, up to 168 right now, you're at 135. With that many young men, I'm sure there's, you know, a percentage that are obviously your star runners, and there's some that, you know, lag behind for whatever reason. Like, how do you keep them still involved when you have that diversity of talent?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know what I say to them? I say, and my actions prove this, I say to them, I don't care how good a runner you are. What I care about is that you come out here, you have fun, and you try to improve. And so what we do is we celebrate the fun and we celebrate the improvements. We really don't celebrate winning. You know, we won the sectional championship this year. We got third in state. And yeah, do we have celebrations in regards to that? Yeah, we do. But what we talk about are the memories. You know, I produced this booklet at the end of the season. And the thing that everybody picks the booklet up for is not to look at the results. They look at the memorable moments that the kids have written all season long.
Yeah.
And it's like 7 pages long of memorable moments. By the way, I stole that from Joe Newton at York too. You know, that's what matters, right? I'll tell you a funny story. In 2007, we had one of the top teams we had the number one team in the state, and we had the top ranked team in the country. And we went down to an invitational in Peoria, and I drove this minibus. It's a long story. I wrecked the minibus. I actually wedged it into the infrastructure of the Pierre Marquette Hotel, took out the water main of the hotel and everything. And I'll never forget, one of my runners got off the bus. He goes, "Coach, even if we win a state title this year, I'll remember this over that.
Forever."
And when I see those guys, guess what they talk about?
That.
Yeah, they talk about me wrecking the bus. They don't talk about the state championship.
That's too funny. Hey, so, you know, I think for our listeners, the importance of celebrating small wins and the importance of not comparing yourself to the other, to the Michael Jordan, but comparing yourself to yourself.
Right.
So that you can see that progress is such a key leadership insight. I really want to make sure the listeners take that home. And can you be a little more specific with the memorable moments, what that looks like in the book? Does somebody actually write, "Hey, that time you wrecked the bus"? Is it a picture? Is it a quote? What is the memorable moment look like in the packet that you create?
Yeah, well, actually, I learned after I used to write them all down, I quickly learned I needed to empower the students, the athletes to do it, right? Yes. And so now they, you know, we have a log online called, I don't know if you've ever used, it's called Running Ahead.
Okay.
It's a phenomenal online place where you can log your miles, and it charts it, and it's a really cool program. Well, anyway, there's a forum on that site, and so the athletes simply, every time a memorable moment comes up, and then I have a senior that I trust that edits the memorable moments, so there's nothing inappropriate, because obviously it's going to go into a booklet where parents are going to read it and other people are going to look at it. So I guess in a lot of those memorable moments are funny things that happen between the coach and the athlete, or with the athletes themselves, or something funny they've said. When I say we celebrate, though, the improvement, the small things, you know, like, for example, on our team this year, we had a young man by the name of Joey Hines. And Joey, you know, is not one of our fastest runners. I think about probably of the – well, when he was a freshman of the 150 we had on the team, I think he was probably like number 147 or 148. He actually, by the time he was a senior, he, out of our 135 guys, I would probably rank him around 70 or 80. He, you know, he just kept getting better every year. And, you know, Joey is an example of one of the young men that he doesn't have a lot of talent, but we're constantly celebrating him because he does all the right things. He shows up to every practice. He works hard. He does the workout to completion. You know, when we do core work like push-ups and, you know, and planks and things like that, you know, it may take him longer, but he'll do it all. And he'll be the last one to finish. And every guy will look over there and see him still doing them. So he shows us by example that what is the right thing to do. And then we celebrate that. The coaches and the athletes themselves will even point that out.
Yeah, that's really awesome. Hey, Paul, what would you consider your worst leadership mistake, and what did you learn from it?
Oh, you know, I saw that question that you prepped us for. I honestly, maybe it sounds egocentric, I honestly cannot think of a leadership mistake other than here's something that I guess I would try to instill in anybody's listening to this. Is I believe my job as a leader is to absorb pain, not inflict it. And I guess some of the leadership mistakes I've made is I've jumped too quickly to try to solve a problem. And in doing so, when I tried to quickly try to solve it, I inflicted unintentional pain to the person that was involved. In other words, could I have maybe listened and dug into the issue from where it was coming from in more detail so that I understood fully what the issue was before I jumped to another level, you know, to an administrative level to try to solve it? You know, maybe I would, I've learned from my mistakes a couple times where a parent has called me about an issue and then I go to the teacher and say, hey, blah, 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 blah. Instead of doing that, I should go to the teacher first and ask about the student without even knowing that I talked to the parent. I'll eventually tell them, but I want to hear everything there is to know about that side before I try to, you know, be the mediator and try to solve the problem.
I think that's wise advice. And also when you jump and try to solve those problems for folks too, you rob them the opportunity from learning from their failures or just learning from the experience of trying to solve the problem as well. So that's really important for our listeners to take home also. Let me ask you this, Paul. What do you do to balance your work life and family? Being out there cross country, those meets, they take weeks. I mean, they take forever. And I'm sure being a department chair, you know, is demanding as well. So how do you balance that time so that you could be there for your family?
Well, you know, it's funny, you know, I'm an environmental science teacher. I teach AP environmental science. And the reason I say that is because I used to live about half an hour from Neuqua Valley. And, you know, you add that up, you know, half an hour here, half an hour home. And then when the construction started, it's turned an hour, you know, there and back an hour, turned into an hour and 15 minutes. And then, of course, there are events I need to attend to the school. So the first thing I did was I moved. And it was more expensive. My wife and I had to really do some savings and do some, you know, change of lifestyle habits to make it happen. But it's been a world of difference to buy that extra hour, hour and a half a day, and possibly even more when you think of all the different events that I would just stay at the high school for something in the evening instead of coming home for a couple hours and then going back to the school. So I guess location, 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 right? You know, I've always been a believer in that family comes first. And I'm not going to say that I'm the perfect model of that. When I first started teaching and coaching at Neuqua Valley and my kids were young, I do have some regrets. You know, I do wish I would have balanced things a little bit better in some of my some of the workload that I took on. But sometimes I look back too, and a lot of that wasn't my choice necessarily. I was at a new high school. I was teaching new classes and new responsibilities. And, you know, coaching is the real time drain for, you know, all the young coaches out there. You really need to think about what you can do to save time, to make those practices as efficient as possible. And ask yourself the question, is that particular event or is that particular, you know, thing that you're planning, is it really going to be a difference maker in your program, opposed to what it's going to do in terms of taking you away from your family? So, you know, now it's a little easier. My son's a junior at Neuqua Valley. My daughter's a junior at Nebraska. You know, my wife doesn't really, I mean, she cares if I'm home or not, don't get me wrong, but doesn't care as much, right? Because there's not little kids to attend to, not events to go to. So, you know, I don't know really what it is other than reflection. I think just sometimes I think young parents especially, they don't take the time to reflect and really think about what they're doing. You know, as a teacher, there's always something you can do. One of my teachers just recently put together a spreadsheet of all the things, all the responsibilities that he has. And there's not enough hours in the day to do everything that's on a spreadsheet. You know, it's a perfect illustration that you've got to prioritize. You've got to, you know, follow Covey and, you know, and look at first things come first. You have to take a look at what those things are and not get too caught up in the busy things and go after the important things.
What's one book every principal should read right now and why?
Well, I've read all of Covey's books, and I really do think everybody needs to read Seven Habits of Highly Successful People. And I know that's an older book, and it may not be as cool to read right now, right? But I really do think that principally it is the best book out there in terms of trying to manage your personal life with your professional life and be effective at it. I say one of the best books I've read recently just came out. It's called The Animal Keepers. And it's about a cross-country team in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, at the high school they call Spash, that takes on a special needs student on their team and just goes through the season in terms of the difference that young man made on the impact that young man had on them. Of course, the team had a great impact on the young man with special needs, but what they learned from that whole situation. It's just a phenomenal book.
Sounds really interesting. So we'll definitely link up for our listeners the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And to tell you the truth, Paul, it's an old one. I haven't read it. I just bought it, and I just finished chapter one. So I'm really, really excited to dig into that, take notes, maybe turn it into a blog post for the audience. But that I've heard, so many good things about it. So, really recommend people checking that out. And the Animal Keepers, that'll be linked up in the notes as well. So, Paul, congratulations. You've made it. I'm going to let you answer this last question. I really enjoy it. It's a pretty big question. You are building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget. Your only limitation is your imagination. So how would you create the school if you're given a blank slate and unlimited resources? What would be your top three priorities building this school?
Well, there would be no bells. First of all, I think, and some of the colleges in the country have taken on this model of, I think our adolescents are pulled in too many directions.
Yeah.
Oh, they're expected to, go to 53 minutes of math, and then 5 minutes later they're in science, and they're expected to, all of a sudden remember what they did in that class yesterday and engage and instill a spirit to learn that material, and then they, jump to another. I just can't believe we do this to our students.
Right.
I guess ideally, I would like to see more of a, especially with older high school students, more of a problem-based situation. I heard of a school in Colorado that, their last year, they call it like a seminar year, and where they do what you're doing with your kids outside the school day. They do it during the day. They take the time to train for a marathon and raise money for a good cause. They go on a whitewater rafting survival trip where they have to work together to purchase their food on a budget and cook the food and, work together to in a common goal. They learn how to invest money, with stocks and things like that, and look at portfolios and really dive into that. And they do that in a real life sense. So I guess my ideal school would be just that. If I got 10 kids that are interested in marine biology, could I hook them up with a marine biologist and have them spend 6 weeks in the Caribbean studying that particular subject? If I've got, 10 other kids that are really passionate about, I guess, investments or, working with money, whatever the case may be, that they would have an opportunity to really dive and dig into that. I get why kids need that general education. They do need that. They need that foundation. It's just the metaphor I use with running is you can't expect to be a great runner unless you have that foundation of those long, slow miles built first. You build up that cardiovascular system, then you can add the other stresses like speed work and hill work and things like that. If you do the speed and hill work first, there's just no way that runner's going to survive in the long run. They're going to get hurt. They're not going to perform well. So I guess our schools are doing a good job of laying down the foundation. I just wish we'd let loose, junior, senior year of high school. Could we have three classes that are integrated, math and science and foreign language and social studies, or physical education and health, and leave it at that for a year, and then go after three other topics or the following year, and get an interest survey based on the kids. What are you interested in? you like working with automobiles, then let's do that. If you like, sometimes I think the kids lose interest in school because we don't really listen to what they're passionate about. Kids are saying to me in high school these days, I can't wait to get out of high school. Well, when I was in high school, I loved it. But now I'm hearing kids say, you know, because of all the pressures and all the things we're throwing at them, the expectations we have of them, I just don't think we're allowing kids to be kids anymore. I guess I would like to see a school that where kids are allowed to really pursue their interests and problem solve and think and work through, you know, those interests in hooking them up with professionals and volunteers that could steer them in the right direction.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice? And what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, I have no real parting words of advice because I'm sure everybody out there has got more wisdom than I do. But the best way to get a hold of me is my email. It's paul_vanderstein, spelled V as in victory, A-N-D-E-R-S-T-E-E-N, at IPSD.org. It stands for Indian Prairie School District. And or, you know, call me on my school phone, 630-428-6040. You know, I'm a big believer in reaching out and trying to help anybody in this professional world, candidates that I don't choose for a particular position, and I really like them. What I always tell them is, I'm going to find you a position. And I do. I'll reach out to my contacts, and I'll try to get them a job somewhere else. Because I really believe if there's a professional out there that's going to be good for kids, I need to find a spot for them somewhere.
Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Paul. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Paul in the search bar, and the show notes page will pop up where you'll get highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. On most mobile phones, you can tap on the cover art and the show notes page will magically appear. Paul, thank you for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you, Daniel.
Hey, Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Do you want to be awesome? I know you do. Please leave a 5-star rating and review for us. Click the podcast artwork and long press the show some love link. That'll bring up a page where you can leave a review. This helps the show stay relevant in iTunes and reach a wider audience that wants to become a better leader. If you'd like to connect with me, and I would love to connect with you, there are also links in the show notes. The blog and podcast has an audience in over 100 countries. Connect with me via email, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or the website betterleadersbetterschools.com.